We want to thank John Ed for opening his heart and church to us to be here for this lay-driven conference. And let's just give him a big hand right now. Thank you. Now, I want to say a few other things first. John Ed is a pastor's pastor. I was thinking this morning that he's such a good model for being a pastor. He has a great vision. He's a visionary leader. At the same time, he shares ministry very effectively, and so his ministry has multiplied over the years. And in the last talk, we talked about our speaker so well, our blind spots, and then our insecurities. John Ed is a person who has humility, but also is secure in who he is in Christ Jesus, and has been able to just open his heart and mind to people in ministry on the staff, to allow them to be everything they could be and can be, but also to see that there is potential ministry in every person. And this church really is an example of building a culture of everybody in ministry and excels in that. And that's why it's a joy to come back here, John Ed, again, and be here with you. And you just bless us so much, and we're so happy to be here. If you'll follow the purple sheet, that's where John Ed's material is there. And you'll find the details there to read on your own, but we just want to say thank you for having us, and we just thank God for you and for your ministry and life.
Thank you, and welcome to Montgomery. Can you hear all right? It's bad up here. Can you hear on the sides okay? Good. It's like that sign, it was a little country church, said, "Speak up, the agnostics are terrible in this place." I want to be sure that everybody can hear it well if you can do that. Let me welcome you to Montgomery. Welcome you to Fraser. I'd like to introduce three or four folks that you'll see and you'll have a chance to meet some this week who are part of our leadership team as a staff here. Let me introduce John Schmidt. He and I share the teaching pastor responsibilities here. Jim Salmonen, who serves sort of as an executive pastor. He was a retired colonel. The best church folks are folks that come out of the laity and have a lot of expertise and commitment to Christ. And he's done the work of an ordained elder and did a whole lot better job than an ordained elder would have done. He is also a full-time local pastor and as an associate member. Also, Shane Seegers. Shane is head of our discipleship education, and that's a focus from our Joel committee that I'll talk about a bit later, what he's doing. Rudy Heinzelman was in here a moment ago. Many of you know Rudy. He's in charge of our missions evangelism outreach group. Now, could I ask you, instead of turning to the purple part, you have a white sheet on the table, which I'd like to use and follow through here. Instead of the purple, most of the material that's on there would have been covered, but I'd like to organize in a little different way. What I'd like to share with you is from two perspectives. Number one, I'd like to share with you where we've come in our philosophy of mobilizing laity for ministry. This is what we do here at Fraser. And I always wonder when people tell you what they do they really do it? So what I'd like to do in about the last 15 minutes of this session together is to have three lay people who demonstrate what I'm going to tell you we do, and then ask them some questions, and we'll do a little interview thing here. And then afterwards, you go ask them, say, is what he said true? Now, part of the weekend here in Every Member and Minister, the reason it's been popular is that it's on campus. So tonight, if you hang around here and you go in and eat supper, ask lay folks. They don't know you here. They might think you're a visitor. They might invite you to their Sunday school class. I hope they do. But ask them. They're the folks who are doing the ministry and what a difference that makes. Let me begin to say, in my own personal opinion, in this new century, the thing that's going to distinguish effective churches from ordinary churches is the ability of the church to mobilize its laity to do ministry. Now, we've come a long ways. Years ago at the Protestant Reformation, there was a huge gulf that had been developed between clergy and laity. And at that point, laity could do nothing. The clergy did everything. I mean, they even read the scriptures for them. They took Holy Communion. And all of a sudden, Martin Luther and John Wesley and some of these guys came along, and they bridged that gap or the gulf and brought the laity and ministry back together and gave the ministry to the laity. And that was the Protestant Reformation. The priesthood of all believers was one of the standard, was one of the pillars of that Reformation. Now, what I perceive is happening about the last 75 years that we've created another gulf. We've become so clergy-oriented that all of a sudden we said, let the clergy go back to doing it, and the laity said, okay, you do it. And the mindset in a lot of churches, if something needs to be done, they ask the question, well, who can we hire to do that? What I like to suggest is that the churches that are going to be most effective in this century are not the folks that hire staff to do it, but train and equip lay people and mobilize them and turn them loose for ministry. These are the groups that are going to make the difference. I think the Protestant Reformation is really being redone today. And churches that do the best job of that will be the churches that are most effective. A second thing I would say is that lay folks want to be involved. I see a deep yearning, lay folks. I want my life to count for something. And I'm looking for some kind of meaningful ministry. Now, a term we try to use a lot is meaningful ministry. We don't want folks just to do church work. There's a difference in church work and the work of the church. People get tired of church work, but they never get tired of the work of the church. And when they're involved in something that's meaningful, boy, it brings a lot of satisfaction to their lives, and it's what is an impetus. So let me walk through this outline with you and just share some things. First, why do you want to mobilize the laity? I've tried to ask myself that question. Why would you want to do this? I see at least four reasons. Number one, it's very biblical. In the New Testament, there's no distinction between clergy and laity. Everybody was the laos, the people of God. The best example I see of that is in Acts 2, 42 through 47. We're preaching a series of sermons right now on authentic Christian community. We're using the same outline, and we do seven morning worship services. In all of our English-speaking services, we're focusing on this. Every week, we put this passage of Scripture in the outline to say, here is a model for the church to look to. This was the early church. And look what these led. Well, they came together. They studied at the apostles' feet. They celebrated the sacrament. They had fellowship. They prayed together. And then it says they pooled their resources and went out and did ministry as any person had need. Their ministry was based on the needs of the folks around them. And it says then that they were happy. They found good report with all of the community. They worshiped God. They praised Him. And the Lord added unto their number yearly those who were being saved. The Lord added unto their number monthly, weekly. Let me ask you this. How many churches is the Lord adding unto daily? Those that are being saved? Now, boy, I tell you, these folks, they wanted to go out and serve. Finances were not a problem. Hey, everything they had, they gave. Every person, it was the laos that moved out, and there were several thousand that were added, and then other thousands not long after in the book of Acts. So many additions took place, they quit talking about additions and said, the church did what? Let it happen again, Lord. I believe that today we sit on the edge of one of the greatest movements of God's Spirit that we've ever experienced. And I believe that revival is coming. It's coming in other parts of the world. It's coming in other parts of the world. I had a call last week. They said, would Fraser like to host a group of pastors from around the world? Some of the effective pastors, about 30 of them, said the corporate worship attendance from these pastors is a little over 1 million people. The smallest is about 40,000. Now, you know, sometimes here in the States, we think, boy, we're really doing it, aren't we? We feel like a rooster bringing a basketball into the hen yard and say, look what other folks are doing. You know, man out there, I want to tell you, there are folks that are doing it, and I believe that God can do it again here. It's biblical. 1 Corinthians 12 is sort of a model, and you know that. In the body of Christ, in my body, every part has a function. My hands, my feet, my eyes don't hear, my ears don't see. And in every church, it is called the body of Christ. It is the extension of the incarnation. Now, in my body, every part's important. I might have a big arm, but I let one little bitty part of my body malfunction, and I get sick. A lot of churches are sick because every part of the body isn't allowed to function to its potential. A healthy body is when I'm coordinated and everything works together. It's very biblical. Secondly, for me, mobilizing the laity, turning them loose, is very natural. It takes seriously rebirth and new creation. The old person is interested in what? Me. Sin. I. What's in it for me? The new person is totally new. You're a new person in Christ. The rebirth is, I'll no longer look at myself, but Christ, what can I do for you in your world? It's a new creation. God doesn't make people better. He makes people new. He didn't say, I've come to make you a little better. He said, I've come to make you new. If you take an old garment, he said, and you know, it's got a hole in it, you put a new patch on it, and then as soon as you wash it, that patch will shrink, and you got a hole again. He said, I didn't come to put patches on old garments. I came to give you a whole new outfit. And it seems to me that when Christ makes us new, our emphasis turns from what's in it for me to what's out there. It's very practical. God, where do I serve? I'm not a couch potato. I'm not sitting here, you know, saying, Lord, look what's in it for me. We're not saved to make us safe. We're saved to serve in His kingdom. And a lot of churches say, well, I just like to grow and grow and grow. I think in a lot of churches, we've got spiritual obesity. I mean, we want to be fed. You ever hear that? Pastor, I want to be fed. Well, after a while, you can't sit there and get fed. You need to go out and to utilize that. And to serve. And the best growth takes place is when we do that. Also, it's natural because it's a ministry based on needs. The laity are out there where folks are hurting. And when they see a need and design a ministry to meet that need, that's what the book in Acts did. That's where meaningful ministry takes place. Let me use a couple of quick examples. We had a guy here who came from the Baptist church. By the way, Baptists make the best Methodist in the world. I mean, this guy came in and he said, we're not doing much in Sunday school. And he had a passion for Sunday school. And I made the mistake of saying to him, well, okay, take the ball and run with it. Now, one thing I've learned in the ministry is if somebody's got an idea, let them run with it. Let them develop it. So this guy, Ed Hodge, said, all right. He said, give me a minute in every worship service. We're going to have a Sunday school minute. And he had some other things. Let me tell you what happened in this church. Today, Fraser has the largest Sunday school attendance of any Methodist church in America. Now, I'd like to tell you, boy, didn't I have a great idea. Wasn't my idea. That was Ed Hodge. And Ed was willing to back it up. How much staff time did we spend with that? Not a whole lot. We just sort of turned him loose. But he saw a need, and he met it. By the way, in our Joel Committee report, our vision statement for where we're going in the future, we're going to take where we are and we're going to go to a different level. We're going to take Sunday school, and you'll hear more about that in some other sessions, but take it to a new level for Sunday school. Let me tell you about another need. In a Sunday school class a few months ago, a young couple's class, there was a guy who had a serious kidney problem. He wasn't going to live if he didn't get a kidney transplant, and they couldn't find one. Now hear this. In that Sunday school class, there was a young couple that sat there and said, well, we'll pray for you. And you better be careful when you pray. Because they started to pray, the couple said, you know, instead of just praying for them, maybe we ought to check and see if we might be a match. And his wife was. And so she said to her husband, we've prayed for this. I think I'll go to the doctor and see. And she was a match. And they transplanted her kidney into him. And last week they came in to me and said, what, this is our 1-year anniversary. Now, here's a man's life's probably saved, but you know who's really happy is Christy Milo. I mean, she is excited. I had a part in that. Now, that's not the kind of thing you sit down on a planting session somewhere and say, let's talk about somebody planting. Who decided that? Who came up with the idea? A layperson. Who saw the need? A layperson. Who prayed about it? A layperson. Look at what began to happen. It's very natural. A third thing is very practical. Lay mobilization is extremely practical. 80-20 principle. In most churches, 20% of the folks do 80% of the work. And if you have a business that does that, you don't stay in business long. And maybe that's one reason so many churches are going out of business. If you're a Methodist, United Methodist, we have closed more United Methodist churches in the last 100 years than we have opened today. We haven't had many risk takers, but we've had a lot of undertakers. And let me tell you something. If we're not willing to take a risk and share the ministry and help mobilize the laity, very practically, and this church has sort of tried to take that seriously. We try to monitor what percentage of the congregation is involved in some specific ministry. And you'll sit in a class with Rudy Heinzelman who helps that. Right now, it's right at 90%. Now, that's a difference. When you get a few folks trying to do a lot of things or a lot of folks, turn them loose and what can happen. Let me talk about burnout for a minute because a lot of people write about burnout. I don't want to burn out. We had a fellow from the paper do an article some time ago and came and asked me, he said, tell me about burnout among you laity. I said, ooh, I never thought about that. I said, I don't think I've ever had a layman tell me they're burned out. I said, we've got a lot that are fired up, but not any that are burned out. I said, won't you talk some more of the staff people? Let's talk to some of the lay people. We couldn't find a single person. Listen, if I'm a lay person, and God's gifted me in this area, and I'll talk a minute about volunteer, and I volunteer to use it in this way, why would I burn out? I'm doing what God called me to do. I don't get burned out. I just get more excited about what I can do. A fourth thing there is niche picking. We call it niche picking. Pick your niche. There's a niche in this church for every layperson. And I'm going to talk in a few minutes about volunteering. We don't recruit people to do something. We ask the lay folks to ask God to help them volunteer and pick that place and niche pick. Pick your niche. If you do a good job of niche picking, you don't have much nitpicking. If I'm doing what God called me to do, I ain't got time to turn around and complain about other things. My dad, who was a pastor, died at 96 last year. He said, you can't row the boat and rock it at the same time. Now, you think about the local church, most folks that do most of the rocking are probably those that are not doing much of the rowing. And niche picking is very, very practical. And it's necessary. I just list that practical, financial. I'm not sure churches are going to be able to keep hiring staffs like we are. What percentage of your budget goes for staff and staff-related expenses? It's continually escalating. It's going to have some financial implications. Now, let me jump from why you mobilize the laity to this question of how do you do it? And I'd like to make this very, very practical about how you do it. What we do is we focus on volunteer rather than recruiting. There are two basic ways to get folks to do something. One is to recruit people. Now, if you recruit somebody, that presupposes somebody knows what that person is capable of doing and needs to do. If you give people an opportunity to volunteer, what we do is we offer a card with 250 areas. And we say, these are some of the things God's called this church to do. Now, would you volunteer to serve in one of these areas? And we use that term, volunteer. Would you say the word volunteer?
Volunteer.
Say it again.
Volunteer.
Now, let me make it clear. You don't volunteer for leadership. Leaders are selected. Service areas you volunteer for. And everybody is expected to volunteer for some place. I'll just very quickly give you 10 or 11 good reasons for volunteering. Now, most churches don't do this. If I recruit and I'm the pastor and we need somebody to teach these sixth grade boys, and I go over to Dale, and man, I got to have somebody to teach those, and if I'm going to recruit him, I can make him feel guilty. Dale, if somebody don't teach these boys, they're going to wind up half of them in jail probably this year. I need you to teach. You know, Dale probably said, I don't want that to happen. I'll try to do that. And so Dale, he doesn't really want to do it, but he doesn't want to turn me down. So he starts. Now, a lot of teachers teach because of that. Now, how long is it going to take him before he burns out? Is he going to be effective there? Is that his gifting? Is that his calling? Volunteer. Let me just give you 11 quick reasons. One, if you let people volunteer, it creates trust in the fact that God has a purpose for each person. It says to every layperson, God's got a purpose for you. Now, we're going to ask you to volunteer to fulfill that purpose. We had a guy here named Chuck Mathis. He is a karate person. He looked over the card and he said, you know, my gifting is in self-defense. He said, what if I just taught a class for women on self-defense? There was a serial rapist in town. He said, if you don't mind, I'm going to charge for it. I said, I don't know if we want to do that. He said, well, I'd like to take the money and give it to the college kids who are going on a mission trip. So if people pay for something, they'll get more out of it. So he did this self-defense class. There was a beautiful young girl named Drew Ann Lackey that took the class. Would you believe that when she finished the last class, about 3 days later, she was in a place in a park and was attacked by this rapist? And she knew what to do. And because of that, he was arrested. And on the front page of the paper, it showed her picture, and they asked her, how did you know what to do? She said, I go to a church where a layman had the ability to teach self-defense, and he taught me what to do. And it probably saved my life. And the addendum to the article was, and how many more people did it save? Now, all that was one layperson. Insignificant, you might say. But boy, he said, hey, I've got a purpose, and I'm going to use it. Self-esteem, it says to everybody, you're very important. Now, we want you to volunteer for some place. Ownership of the ministry. If Dale volunteers to teach those sixth graders, he's got ownership of that. If I recruit him, who has the ownership? And folks function much better if they have ownership of what they're doing. Fourth area, that you get to choose an area of gifting. You choose it. A few years ago, I had a young doctor in this church, and he said, you know, what we need is medical care for the underprivileged. And just out of this church and then later on another location, he started a free medical clinic using volunteers. Do you know that today, there's a medical ministry's outreach supported by a lot of churches that grew out of that one doctor, one guy who had an idea and acted on it, and today it's a big ministry throughout this community, a very effective ministry. How do you think Dr. Goodman feels? I'm making a difference. You get also number five, to deploy a person's gifts. Number six, people have a hard time saying no. If you volunteer, you're not being coerced into something. You're not made to feel guilty. You're not intimidated. Number seven, staff facilitates rather than determines areas of ministry. I want to confess to you, we got some great staff here, but we don't have a staff that can determine where folks ought to serve. We just don't have staff members that smart. But we got lay folks that are smart enough to figure out where they ought to serve. So therefore, the function of a staff person is to help train and equip that lay person to do their job, but they don't determine what that job is. We ask for a one-year commitment. Sometimes if people take a job in the church, they don't know when they're going to ever get rid of it. You know, you got it till you die or something happens. Every year, that commitment card is offered. It affirms the creativity of lay people. Lay folks are incredibly creative. And just to turn them loose, let me just divert here for about 3 or 4 minutes and ask you to watch the screens. A couple of things from ideas. I'm not sure which one is first. We had a group of guys that said, we're sportsmen. We like hunting, fishing. Why don't we develop a ministry? Now, I'm going to talk a minute about Ground Up. That was their idea, and we sort of turned them loose to do it. And we had a huge sportsman's dinner. And part of this is just what they sort of put together to advertise it. Had a speaker to come in and had multiple men make first-time decisions for Christ. Had about 600 or 700 or 800 men come. You had to have a ticket, free ticket. Had to bring a... And another one, we had a little parking problem for a while when we were doing this building. And we needed people to park across the street. How do you communicate that? We had some lay folks that came up with an idea. And I'll just let you see what the idea was, and it worked. So let me just invite your attention to the screens for just a moment. I believe the first one here is the sportsman's an advertisement. What I'd like to suggest is that lay folks are the most creative people in the world. And generally, if you say something, how in the world could you do most anything? You let a group of lay folks sit down and look at it, and you'll probably come up with an answer. If it's how to reach a group of people, if it's how to solve some challenge that a church has, volunteering gives that opportunity. Let me hit 2 or 3 other things on the back of your sheet there for a minute. Number one's a mindset. One thing, the whole concept of volunteering and getting lay folks involved, you begin to say we rather than y'all. Or if you're from the north, you all. You know, as long as folks can say, what are you all doing? That sort of, divests my interest in it. But if I say, we have this ministry, look at the difference it makes. And also, everybody volunteers. What you start is an idea where people talk, everybody volunteers. Sometimes on Sunday morning, we'll ask people to stand up, turn around, greet the people around you, and tell them where you volunteer. And if I turn around and greet you and stutter a little bit, am I volunteered? Now, it also says something about the purpose of staff. Later on through this, you'll discuss. We say very clearly, the function of a staff person is never to do ministry, but to train and equip lay people to do ministry. Let me say that again. The purpose of a staff person is never to do ministry, but to train and equip lay folks to do ministry. Now, we ask every staff person to volunteer someplace outside of their sphere of responsibility. But we don't hire people to do something. We do hire people to help train and equip lay people. Strategy. Our strategy is that ministers emerge from the ground up. In a lot of churches, the idea is we're going to get a group of folks, sit down, decide what we want to do, and it'll come down, the trickle-down effect. We're Methodists. You can't wait for Nashville to tell us what to do. You can't wait for the annual conference. You can't wait for the district. In fact, I don't think you ought to wait for the staff of any church. What you ought to do is tap into all of these lay folks that are out there, and they know, and ministries emerge from the ground up. Most of the ministers in this church have emerged from the ground up. I'm going to give you 3 examples of it live in just a moment. Support groups. We've got support groups that for about most anything you can think of. Where did they all come from? Somebody was out there and said, hey, some of us have lupus, or some of us are caring for parents who have Alzheimer's, or one support group. These are the folks that see the need, and when a ministry emerges from the ground up, then you have lay folks that tag in. The vehicle is a commitment card. You have a copy of that probably in there. We'll walk through that in its entirety in the Every Member and Ministry Weekend. The commitment card is not just for money, it's for time. Stewardship is not about money, it's about people. And what we try to do on that card is give everybody an opportunity to make a commitment. You got 250 choices, for serving. You've got choices for your financial commitment. We ask people to make a commitment for praying and for serving. And then you also have an evaluation. There has to be an accountability. And whenever ministry is involved, accountability will take place. Now, I want to introduce you to two or three folks. I see a couple of them over here. If y'all would come up here, Tom and Pat. Is Sharon Hall, where is she? Where's Sharon? Oh, okay. I see. If y'all would make your way up here very quickly. Now, I could tell you all this stuff about Ground Up and about lay folks taking the ball and running with it. I just want to introduce you to three people right here who have come up with an idea for ministry. And these are not little bitty ministries. What a difference. Let me give each of you, and I'd like to just talk to you a minute and let you have an opportunity to share. Let me first introduce you to Tom Oliphant. And this is Sharon Hall, and this is Pat McWhorter. I apologize, Pat. I told you everybody have a coat and tie on. I'm sorry.
He hates it when I outdress him on some days.
You see, I got my tie on.
You got your tie on. Let me introduce you and just ask them to take a minute, and I'd like to ask them a couple of questions. Tom Oliphant came. He's a new member. I met him playing tennis. He's probably the only person you'll meet that's ranked as an amateur in the world in tennis. He's one of the better tennis players in the state and the South, and he's retired early. He plays tennis all the time. But he came up one day and he said, you know, I was listening on the radio about financial stuff, and this guy was saying the same thing my daddy taught me. And he said, would you mind if I went up to Nashville and got trained with Dave Ramsey and maybe came back and did a ministry? Whose idea was that? Did somebody approach you?
It was all yours.
All my idea.
You said if I didn't do it, I'd be in serious trouble. No, I'm just kidding. No, I was out in the yard working on the house one day, and it was a God thing. I mean, I just was so convicted that I needed to teach this stuff that I was hearing on the radio to people because it was the same thing my dad had taught me when I was growing up as a young boy.
And so you wanted to go up to Nashville. You did and got trained. You came back and you said, what'd you ask to do?
Well, I put a short program together for you and Rudy and some of the staff. So here's what I'd like to do. You said, let's go do it. And so we set about putting the thing in place. First class we had was
Let me tell you, before you say the first class, he said, let's try it and maybe could, because it cost $80 a couple.
About $90, yeah.
And $90, and said, he said, what if this fails? What if only five or six folks come? So we seeded to have at least 10 people so he wouldn't fail. How many did you have for that first time?
Just shy of 300. I was overwhelmed.
And you taught the course, and I know one of the things they do is reduce debt. Could you just tell us about the average debt when these folks come into a class that they have, and in a period of 13 weeks, how much just debt is reduced?
The average person will reduce debt about $5,000 and increase their savings somewhere in the $200 to $3,500 range if they follow the principles that we provide them.
All right, now, if you don't know, he's going to be around afterwards, but this is marvelous. How many times now have you done this?
This is our sixth year, and we've probably right at 1,000 people that have been through. And the interesting part, John, it is about a third, more than a third of those are from outside this church. That's real amazing.
It's an outreach committee. And for young couples, do they say anything about tithing ever?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Did they say anything about tithing?
Oh, absolutely. That's the first thing on the budget. Let's take care of that, and everything else will fall in place. And the 13th session, by the way, is one of the best presentations on giving that you've ever heard.
And so, I mean, here's a layperson with an idea. Let me tell you what's made a difference. I wish can't put a number on how many marriages have probably been saved. I've had several come to me and say, you know, if it hadn't been for that financial piece, our marriage was falling apart financially. And not only that, but just to have how to handle my finances. Are you familiar with Dave Ramsey? Are you familiar with Larry Burkett? Dave Ramsey is really Larry Burkett on caffeine.
On steroids.
On that. But let me just ask you one other question. How much staff time has been given to you in all of this
Very little. Rudy helps out every once in a while when I need something within the church, but primarily it's let's do it, and we went off and did it.
One thing a church has to do is develop a trust level. You got to trust lay folks to turn them loose, and you ain't got to keep your finger on it. It has to be accountability. But Tom Oliphant, and let me ask you, you've made a lot of money working for folks. Is there any payoff for satisfaction or anything of you?
The most satisfying thing with this is that there's not a 2 or 3 week period that goes by, John Ed, where somebody at the church will come up to me and say, 3 more months or 6 more months. And what they mean is that's until they're debt-free except for their mortgage. I ran into a lady at Walmart the other night that had been in my class 3 years ago and came up and said, we're now debt-free, we're working on our mortgage, and I'm just really excited.
If we had to pay him and hire him, the pay is a whole lot better when you see the satisfaction of how God's used you for a ministry. Sharon, come up here just a minute. Sharon, just not long ago, came up with an idea. Now, I'd like to tell you, boy, our staff thought of this. Our staff hadn't even thought in this direction. But here's a layperson, and tell them what your idea was.
After being in San Antonio, Texas, I was privileged to be in a ministry called Threads of Love. And what that is a little bit of thread and a lot of love to sew for preemies at the different hospitals in all of Montgomery. We had Shelby, but we found out that another Threads of Love has them. We have Opelika that we provide clothing and a few other things that we'll tell you about. But the main reason it was started was a lady was asked by a doctor if there was anybody that could sew a burial gown. A burial gown? Who goes into the hospital thinking that they will ever need a burial gown for their baby? And that's how it began. And that's where the love of it has come from. And we have not only been able to minister to the babies by providing them more than just the burial gowns, we provide many, many other things that we have a catalog on that no other Threads of Love does. There are 130 chapters of Threads of Love throughout the United States. You can go to threadsoflove.org and find out where it is in your locale. All it took was one person to say, Lord, I'm not an organized person. He said, I know it. But he said, are you obedient? So I said, yes, Lord, I know not to be obedient is not what I want, the path that I want to follow. So we have not only ministered to the babies, to the parents, to the grandparents, which have just been delighted, but also to the doctors and the nurses. And then I have ladies all throughout this whole area of Montgomery and Wetumpka and Prattville that are ministered to because maybe they had a baby that died and nobody was there to help them.
Let me just tell you, I've got a new grandbaby. A month ago, I was at the hospital up there waiting for the baby to be born. These two nurses came out and said, Brother Matheson, will you come back here? I said, where are we going? They said, let me show you something. And they carried me in the preemie area. They said, let me show you this. Your church sold all of these blankets, little deals, and said, I can't tell you. Now, they weren't members of this church. Said, I can't tell you how much we as nurses appreciate and what it did for those parents. Now, here's one lady. How much staff time?
I was privileged to have one lady that volunteered to do our catalog to list the items that we actually make that I'll put a display on outside. But further than copying and a few things like that, just that.
Point I'll make to you is that some of the best ministers of the church, you don't have staff folks that give all these hours. All you got to do is have some lay folks who are in an atmosphere where permission is given to let God use them in an area. And not only, I believe there are 5 hospitals that you provide
well,
those
we
for.
We have 4 now.
4 hospitals.
But we double up on one of
and
them.
And there's some other areas. And how much does the church pay you?
The Lord just gives me Blessing upon blessing. Thank you, Johnny.
And it's, and let me tell you, God's blessings is a whole lot better than just that. Let me introduce you to Pat McWhorter. Pat came up one day and said, "I've got an idea." He's a lobbyist. He's down in state capitol all the time, and he's always working with people. And we got some more lobbyists.
No, he gave me a sign of a cross over
there. Oh, sign of a cross, right. So he came and he said, "I've got an idea, and of all people, a lobbyist ought to have this idea of how do you carry your faith to your place of work." And sort of tell us what happened from there.
All right. First, can I tell you a little story about lobbyists? Everybody wonders, you know, what a lobbyist is. I heard a story about that. Three guys standing around wondering what the oldest profession in the world was. First one was a doctor, and he said, "Well, you know, in Genesis it says that God put Adam to sleep. That's anesthesia. Took a rib from him. That's surgery. Therefore, that's the first and oldest profession." The engineer said, No. Before that in Genesis, it talks about how God brought order to the universe out of chaos. That engineering's the oldest profession. That's the greatest feat of civil engineering known. Third guy was a lobbyist. He looked at him and smiled and said, "Who do you think created the chaos?"
That's exactly.
But we went to, for several years, just quickly, I'd been getting different things on my email at the office from workplace related. Oz Hillman, I don't know if you all have heard of him, out of Atlanta. Just things like that. And God led me to a conference that Henry Blackaby did in Atlanta 3 years ago. Called His Presence in the Workplace. Billy Graham Association put it together. And that's when I came back and God had just put it on my heart that we needed to, I like to call it every member in ministry version 2, which is just simply to equip, affirm, and release all of our members to where they're called to be and be Christ's representative there.
Right. And so we've got a work life. Not a lot of staff. How much staff time have we given you?
Well, they have to watch to keep me out of trouble, but that's about it. But no, we've got one contact, as usual, that kind of affirms and holds us accountable. And I control all of, we've got over 1,300 people now that receive an email twice a week from us and of a workplace-related positive message. I control, though, for the church, the messages. When somebody responds to those messages, it comes to my email box. And we respond to them, or we forward it to the appropriate staff person, or whatever.
And how much does the church pay you?
I just don't want to say. I get my blessings like the rest of them do. It's been a huge blessing. We've had responses, John Ed, as you know, from as far away as we had a chaplain, an army chaplain in Korea, that wrote us back and talked about what a blessing it was to him to be able to receive these messages and apply them to his workplace. And that's what we're all about.
The point I'll make to you is I wish the staff had said, "Man, we thought of that." But the best things that are happening in the life of this church, no staff person had anything to do with it. But sometimes you do have to create an atmosphere where staff people can say to lay folks, "Dream God's dream." And then when they dream God's dream and God answers, say, "Okay, turn it loose." Now, there has to be accountability. We have a mission statement: win, disciple, and serve. Does the ministry fit into that? If it does, then the church needs to turn them loose. Here are three examples of folks. Now, let me go back again. You said, how many folks, and these are not just little bitty things. I know some churches that hire a whole staff member to do what Tom Oliphant does as a volunteer. And do you burn out doing that? Are you burned out?
No, I thoroughly enjoy it. Got a class tonight at 6 if you want to come. Room 7202, right above the fellowship hall. Be glad to have you.
All right. And how many folks did you say probably been in?
Over 1,000 people have been through it. And again, about a third outside the church. So it's really an outreach.
And again, do you feel burned out at all?
No. I have to keep sewing.
You have to just keep sewing and keep going.
I can't.
How many volunteers do you have in that?
At any one time, we have 60 to 80. And they're from all different churches, all around.
Now, let me tell you, a lot of folks can sew that can't sing or go to the prison. And, a lot of places is something for everybody. And how many folks did you say are in work-life ministry?
We're up over 1,300 that are signed up as workplace ministers. But as everybody else has said, it's kind of taken a life of its own in the community and beyond. So.
Well, what I wanted to do was to let you see three folks, and these were the three I asked to do it, and I could multiply this group by a whole choir of folks up here. If you take prison ministry, I'd like to tell you, that came out of the staff. It didn't. It came out of a heart for some folks to go to prisons. There's a ministry that you'll read about in those little books you see demonstrated out there. Was a lady named Carol Taylor that came up one day, and she trains dogs. She has a friend that had an autistic child. And one day she stopped by to see the autistic child and didn't want to leave the dog in the car, so she carried the dog inside. Nobody could communicate with the child. When the dog walked in, the child became interested in the dog. She came up to me and to Rudy Heinzel and said, "Have you ever thought about a ministry with animals?" I said, "Yeah, I've been thinking about that for a long time." "No, what are you talking about?" She said, "Do you realize that a lot of people who are mentally, physically challenged relate better to animals than they do to people?" I said, "I didn't know that." She said, "Would you like for me to... could I just look at seeing about a ministry?" I said, "Sure." And, you know, best thing to do is turn them loose. She said, "Could I put an announcement in the bulletin? Ask people to meet." I said, "Sure, we'll have a closet out here y'all can meet in. I'm sure that'd be enough room." Well, the first time she had the meeting, the room wasn't big enough. And today, they call it PAWS, P-A-W-S. Pets Are Working Saints. And it's just, and boy, they go, and I'll have to, I don't even know an update. You'll see part of that at the expo. They just have several hundred folks involved in that. I'll just tell you one quick outreach of that. Whenever you plant a seed, you don't ever know where it's going. We have a big prison ministry. We have some people who are on death row. There were two people on death row that the chaplain or the warden, nobody could make, couldn't communicate with at all. Our PAWS ministry went with our prison ministry out to the prison. The warden allowed the PAWS ministry to go up on death row. And they walked in and had two or three of these little animals, one which was a little bird. And when they got up there with a little bird and had a little dog, this two prisoners that nobody had ever been able to communicate with, he got interested in that bird. And he called the guy over there and through the bars there in his isolation death. He started asking about the bird, and they started talking. He said, "Well, what are y'all doing here?" And he started telling him what we were doing there as a ministry. It was the first contact that had been made with this fellow. He was executed not long after that. Before that, he made a commitment to Christ before he was executed. And there was a big article in the Montgomery Advertiser, a half page, showing this guy with the bird on his shoulder, little yellow bird. Now, who'd have ever thought of using a bird? I just want to say to you, lay folks are ultra creative. Lay folks have more ideas, and we staff clergy folks are not the folks that God has just, you're the only people I'm going to speak to. If you've got a church, you probably got 300 or 400 people for every staff person. Well, God might be planting ideas 300 or 400 out there if we give people the opportunity, the atmosphere, to hear from God and then to turn them loose to go and to do ministry. Let me conclude by just saying one of the best things that you can do while you're here tonight, talk to some of the lay people. Ask them, where do you serve? When you go, are y'all eating dinner here tonight, here at the church? I think our whole food service, most of it's volunteer. Some folks can cook or sew that can't sing or you know, teach financial peace. We serve about 2,600 meals a week. And there are a lot of volunteers, 600 or 700, 800 of them in that area. Ask those folks that you see in there volunteering tonight at dinner, ask them, why are you doing this? I don't know what they'll tell you, but just ask them. If you're a volunteer, why are you doing it? Or when you see people, just ask them, why are you volunteering? This is an extremely exciting time. Let me go back to where I started. I believe the churches that are going to be the most effective in this century, the churches are going to make a difference and changing the world will be the churches that do the best job of allowing the lay folks to hear from God, and then having staff folks to help train and equip them, and then turn them loose to go out and to do ministry. And that becomes the most exciting thing in the world. Thank you for being here. Thank you guys for coming in, being a part of this. And they're going to... They'll be around for a few minutes if you want to ask them any questions. That'd be very helpful. Thank you for being here.
Anyway, we've had a great day so far, and we want you to be able to take part in what happens later on this evening here at this church. And I want to give you some announcements, and then we will have discussion around our tables, and what we'd like you to do is to share ideas of how you mobilize lay people in your church. And if you need ideas, I'm sure there's people at your table that have ideas that you can share together. Of course, you've learned a lot from John Ed already about things that they do here. And it is a concept to allow people to volunteer rather than trying to recruit everybody. And that is such a great thing, because I know that people who volunteer really want to do something great for God. At my church, in what I've been doing with the women this year, we've had a theme called Stepping Out. And we have really tried to help the women to step out beyond their comfort zones and do things for God that they've never done before. And it's been exciting to see that happen in what we've been doing at our church. So we want you to spend some time around your table in this last half hour. And then at 5:15, they'll be serving dinner in the fellowship hall. It's $4, and you pay them in the fellowship hall. You don't pay our people that are at the Beeson Institute. You go directly in, and you can have dinner. And then it's called Family Night Supper. And then at 6 o'clock, I want to give you some areas where you could go. So jot these down if it interests you. In that fellowship hall will be a Wednesday night Bible study at 6 o'clock. There's also going to be a Bible study in room 3103 called The Covenants, and a Step 4 group in room 8114. Can you tell us what the Step 4 group is, John Ed?
Yeah.
That might be helpful.
Just in a nutshell, Shane Seegers, you saw, when a person joins a church, we require them to go through 4 steps. And it's the Methodist version of what a lot of other churches use, the Rick Warren baseball diamond, but it's all in Methodist terms from the discipline, from Wesley. And if this is step 4, this being the fourth Wednesday. No, that's not right, is it? So this is the fourth step, and we ask every member to go through it, but every new member goes through that. I would encourage you, if you want to see something that would be maybe a bit different, you can hear Bible studies and all, but the step class would be very, very interesting with Shane Seegers. You met Shane.
Great, super. Okay, great. That's in room 8114.
It's as far that way as you can go.
And then at 6 o'clock, if you're interested at all in children's ministry, the Life Savers, which are the fourth year 4 to the third grade, are in 6200s, those rooms, from 4 years old to third grade. The Life of Faith Girls Club are fourth grade girls. That's room 6251. A Bible study for 4th through 6th grade is in 6207, and Children's Worship Arts is in 6100s. So in the 6,000 area, obviously, is all the children's ministries. And then at 7 o'clock, you could attend the choir and orchestra rehearsal, if that's an interest to you at all. And tomorrow morning, we want to start promptly at 8 o'clock. So we want you all here at 8. We'll have our time of worship together, and then you'll be hearing Dr. Jim Garlow, which I'm sure you'll really find very wonderful. So we'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Spend some time in your group now and talk about ideas of how you can get your lay people involved, and then you may have the rest of the evening to do whatever you would like to do as far as ministry around the church. And we'll see you tomorrow. Have a great evening.